From the right, I'm Matt Lewis.
From the left, I'm Bill Scher.
And you're watching
The Week in Blog.
On this week's episode, Dan Coats may run for Senate in Indiana. Carly Fiorina runs a very, very bizarre ad featuring a demon-eyed sheep. But first, Bill, President Obama went to Baltimore and held a Q&A session with Republicans. A lot of people think it's a good thing to do this sort of question and answer thing regularly. What's your take on that?
Well, certainly in the liberal blogosphere, I think liberals generally were very enthusiastic about Obama's move there. I was talking with Con Carroll last week, and we missed you last week, by the way.
Yes.
We both noted that the progressive blogosphere is just not with Obama at all lately. And Con was arguing that I was making it for him very difficult for him to govern. I was being a little bit more circumspect about that. But that was something where I think Obama got near universal praise. Blue Man Tribune, one example. Obama performed as well as any British prime minister during question time. The same cannot be said for the Republicans, who by and large try to use dishonest arguments and demonstrably inaccurate statistics. Only have Obama to tell them to get serious and stop trying to score cheap political points. Republicans will certainly not want to repeat this extremely painful beatdown. But you do have one counterintuitive point, and one that has extrapolated out in recent days amongst progressive bloggers from Digby, saying, quote, "It would appear people are extremely happy that Obama hit out of the park yesterday. So I'm in a minority of those who think it wasn't all that. It's not that I don't think he performed well. He always performs well. Morale is important. If you make people feel charged up, that's all to the good. However, I remain concerned that the message is not as clear to the rest of the country as his supporters think it was. I watched Clinton do this type of thing over and over again. It didn't change the dynamic at all. He was personally successful, but the liberal ideology was degraded every time he conceded something, like I think we raised taxes too much or the era of big government is over. People love his ability to out-talk his accusers, but the agenda suffered greatly from the ceaseless efforts to cajole a psychotically hostile opposition into working with him." And you've seen other posts recently, from Jenk over at Huffington Post, how bipartisanship hurts the country. James Fowles of The Atlantic, why bipartisanship can't work. So that's still a bit of a disconnect
between
Obama's personal performance and what this means policy-wise.
The people who say Obama did well were right. I wrote about this at Politics Daily. I think it was a win for Obama. He came across as the professor lecturing. Part of that has to do with the way that the setting was arranged. But part of it also, I also think it was a win for Obama simply because it changed the subject from Scott Brown. Why change the narrative? Why give anybody a chance to change the narrative? So I think it was a net gain. I'm not going to say it was a home run for Obama, but a net gain for Obama, a net loss for Republicans. But, David Korn at Politics Daily, my fellow blogger writer over there, as part of this effort, and apparently there's a lot of conservatives who signed on to it too, John Hinckley, I believe, I think Patrick Ruffini maybe, who want there to be a regularly held question time. Just
the
like
banned question time was the
exactly,
hot
that's
Twitter
what
hashtag
is.
Yesterday.
Now, I don't think it's a good move for Republicans based on the last time, the question time. But look, even let me read to you Michelle Malkin here. She even praised Obama for the willingness to do it. She says, "Yes, Obama has shown some of his finger-wagging tendencies, ignored GOP Rep. Tom Price's question, yada, yada, yada. But the lesson has been most compelling, the most transparency and openness we've seen since the start of the term. Good on the House Republicans for throwing the doors open. And yes, I'm going to compliment the president. Good on him for taking part. Yet another dividend of the Massachusetts miracle. Forget the stage dog and pony campaign rallies and stack town halls. Do this every week." So I think I'm in the minority of thinking that maybe it wouldn't be good for Republicans to do this every week. A lot of Republicans and Democrats are applauding this sort of openness, and they want more of it.
Well, I think the tough thing, I mean, it should be good for anybody to want to do this. You should have enough faith in your arguments to want more people to see them, be held up to the light of day.
Right, and I want him to be questioned like you would question somebody on trial.
Right.
Have him be seated. Have maybe a glass of water in front of him. That's it. But where he's on stage lecturing, and let's face it, any Republican is going, I'm sorry, any president will look good compared to the average member of Congress. And so I just think it was like, you know, the Yankees come to town and play the Poughkeepsie, you know, whatever. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it doesn't mean his ideas are right or wrong or better or worse, but it does mean he's a star and they may not.
You have a killer argument against the president that the president wouldn't be able to properly, you know, parry, you know, in the spotlight.
Well, the whole, like,
that could be very embarrassing for the president. But when you go up with, I mean, where Obama's skill is, when you go up with Obama with a really lame talking point that just does not hold water at all,
I think he's
going to embarrass you.
I think that the Republican, and by the way, let's just be honest about it. Yesterday, Obama spoke to Democrats who did the same grandstanding and frankly looked like bigger political hacks than Republicans.
I don't know if there's much blogging about this.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not, for obvious reasons, it doesn't have the same, compelling drama to it. But
in some ways, I thought it was more compelling, because you saw a more subtle friction between the president
true.
And his own party.
That's true.
You know, it didn't blow up in the same, you know, obvious way.
But you had
an article on The Hill the day after, saying a lot of Senate Democrats were grousing that Obama wasn't laying out a path on health care for them. And I imagine that someone indirectly attributed the fact that Obama was sort of chiding them, saying, hey, you're here to do your jobs, not just run for re-election. Don't let one Senate election stop you from actually passing things.
Yeah, and I do think one thing I will agree with you with in terms of the Republican meeting is anybody who thought that he needs a teleprompter, I've never bought into that theory. And, right. We've talked about it here. The guy's smart. The guy can talk. He was a professor. This is his milieu. And we played into his hands. I say we. I'm not a Republican necessarily. I mean, I guess if I had to register in Virginia, we don't have registration. You don't register, but you can vote a ballot. So if you vote a Republican ballot in the primary, they assume you're a Republican, yada, yada, yada. I got to quit using yada, yada, yada. It's like a Seinfeld episode. I've done it twice today. Yada, 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 bisque. But in any event, I think that if they thought that they were going to make him look bad, that he couldn't talk without a teleprompter, then they may have learned their lesson from that. He's a smart guy. He happens to be wrong, in my opinion, on a variety of important fundamental issues. But he is a smart guy, and he was a professor. He can take questions and parry them.
Well, I think Obama's in this not just to boost his personal popularity. You know, as Digby said, that it might help him in that regard. But is he going to successfully change the political dynamic, that shame that he's trying to put on Republicans to be partners in governing and not just obstructionists? Can he actually pick off some Republicans and say, gee, it's in my political interest now to work with Obama, because if I don't, he's going to humiliate me back home for being a knee-jerk no vote?
I mean, I assume this is part of a David Plouffe strategy, that he's back and things have turned a little bit for the better. And I have to assume that they don't think this is going to be a slam dunk, that he gives one, Q&A and everything changes, but it's part of a concerted strategy to slow.
They want to sustain this somehow.
Right.
They want to find more opportunities to do this.
Now, remember, 6 months ago, Obama, there was all these big stories all over the news that Obama is going to go out on the road more. Remember that?
Yep.
He's going to be out there. And that lasted for about a week. So sustaining things is key.
Right. But there's this one James Fallows post at The Atlantic relaying a note that he got from someone he describes as someone with many decades experience in national politics, talking about a conversation he witnessed himself between two members of Congress, one Republican, one Democrat. The Republicans, this is during the stimulus bill debate, the Republican says, I'd like this in the bill. Democrat says, if we put it in, will you vote for the bill? Republican, you know I can't vote for the bill. Then why should we put it in the bill?
Right.
And goes on to say that the way the Republican Party is structured now, There is such sustained party discipline by, you know, lots of outside forces, Tea Party, talk radio, etc. There's just no way you can get someone to break free of that and actually cut a deal across party lines.
Well, look, I think it's fair to say that both sides have become more pure. And, you know, I was the other night watching...
The Democrats, they're probably split down the middle amongst themselves.
Democrats...
If they could vote in lockstep, we wouldn't be talking about this. There'd be a slew of legislation passed by now.
You're exactly right, because they had the 60 votes. But I was watching Olbermann the other day. They're ready to throw Blanche Lincoln under the bus. They're ready to throw Evan Bayh under the bus. What happened to the whole big tent, you know?
Well, in the narrative about... There's a desire for more ideological purity,
yeah.
And there's pressure being put upon those senators, but within the actual Democrats in Washington, you know, that's not the attitude. And the pressure on the Democrats from the left blogosphere is not as successful at instilling party discipline than the pressure you get on the right from blogs, talk radio, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, I interviewed Jonathan Martin today for my podcast. By the way, cheap plug. Launched a new podcast.
So how do you get the Matt Lewis podcast?
You go to mattlewis.org. And my first two guests were Rachel Campos Duffy from The Real World, Shira Toplitz from Roll Call. And today I had Jonathan Martin on. And we talking about a piece that he wrote at Politico today where he basically talked about the Republican Party is still the establishment party. And he talked about, you know, Bob McDonnell, yeah, he was conservative, but he ran a pretty traditional Republican campaign. Scott Brown, certainly not a hardcore conservative. We talked about that the other week. And there's many examples of this, the guy Mark Kirk in Illinois. But just recently, Dan Coats, former U.S. Senator, is now seriously considering challenging Evan Bayh in Indiana. So, look, I think that these Republicans could reach across party lines if they were brought in to begin with from the beginning. Because you can't accuse people like Dan Coats and Mark Kirk of being, you know, extreme right-wingers. So, and frankly, look, in the blogosphere, you know, Hugh Hewitt, Jennifer Rubin, they were all in favor of Coats. But, you know, Eric Erickson, you know, Jim Garrity, you know, they're sort of pushing back. Eric Erickson says if it's the best Republican Party of Indiana can do is retread old horses who put themselves out to pasture to begin with. We're screwed. So there is this fight on the right, but they keep electing. It's not just, you know, Marco Rubio is beating Charlie Crist. It's a lot of Dan Coats getting elected, it seems like, and Scott Brown's.
We were going to talk about Dan Coats a little bit, so I might as well do that now. It would be interesting if Mark Rubio manages to win in Florida, or at least in the primary, and Dan Coats can't take out Evan Bayh, that would certainly give more. It would give the Tea Partiers even more, you know, mojo to say you got to listen to us
right.
And not what the party poobahs say. But you know, Coates got a very rough response from the liberal blogosphere as well as the conservative blogosphere. Maybe that's not unusual, but there seemed to be a real blast between both the national bloggers and Indiana bloggers. Jed Lewison at Daily Kos saying, this is a guy who's involved with the family, the controversial conservative religious group in D.C., helped pick Sarah Palin as McCain's vice president, lobbied against health care as a official registered lobbyist, and tried to put Harriet Myers on the Supreme Court. In other words, he's emblematic of Republican mediocrity. And you have there's a big liberal blog in Indiana called Blue Indiana, so the cold welcome for Coats. If Coats is the hero of the RNC is looking for, they must be really terrified of Bayh v. Hostetler. And I'm not sure if Coats fits in the RNC strategy against Bayh. Coats sort of seen as, hey, you got a real giant killer against Bayh, someone with some real stature. But it'd be interesting to see if the blogosphere response takes a shine off of that and doesn't let him get his footing to mount a really tough race.
Definitely. So we'll see, but I guess sort of bringing it around full circle, it would be I think if bipartisanship is something that we're looking for, that Democrats really want,
Well, at this point, they need it. They have almost no choice in the matter if they want to get most anything passed. Interesting example this week, though, as much as we talk about bipartisanship not being possible, you have Lindsey Graham. He was generally not considered a moderate, even though I know a lot of conservatives don't like him when he goes rogue. But he's not in the Susan Collins Olympia Snow mold. But he has moved to Obama's left, it seems, on climate, where you had Obama at the New Hampshire town hall opening the door towards ditching a carbon cap temporarily in the Senate. He sort of said, not that he personally endorsed it, but, hey, if the Senate ends up separating out cap and trade, it does an energy-only bill, hey, they might do that. He kind of shrugged his shoulders at it. And he got a lot of flack from environmental bloggers for doing that, although Climate Progress, which they thought that some people were being overblown about it, and that Obama's going to mean very much. But then you had Lindsey Graham come out the next day saying, I'm not going to vote for a half-ass, it's a quote, half-ass energy-only bill because there's a connection between having a price on carbon that you'd get with a carbon cap and investing in clean energy. And I like Climate Progress to say that, you know, Graham is the greatest messenger on climate. Better than Obama, better than any other Democrat.
It's very bizarre.
So it remains to be seen if Graham is able to bring over his vote in and of himself does not get you to 60 on climate because you have a bunch of Democrats who are on the fence about it. Graham would have to bring, you know, a number of Republicans with them to make that work. I think there was a general sense that, hey, cap and trade was, you know, on the ropes before Massachusetts. It was almost certainly dead now, but Graham is almost single-handedly keeping the entire issue alive and might even make it to be, you know, the grandest example of bipartisanship if you can actually pull this off.
The grandest example of idiocy and bizarreness. But speaking of things that are bizarre, Bill, And what's up with this? You've seen this ad. What, you want to set this one up, this Carly,
oh, sure.
Carly Fiorina web ad?
So, another example of, of infighting amongst Republicans. It's a primary. You get infighting in primaries. But Carly Fiorina running against Tom Campbell to take on Barbara Boxer in a Senate race. And Fiorina wanting to run to Campbell's right, does a 3-minute web ad that cannot be done justice by describing it orally.
Yes, you must. If you haven't seen this,
splice in.
Yeah, if you have not seen this yet, you must do yourself a favor and devote it's long. It's like at least 5 minutes, but
right.
Do yourself a favor.
If you Google demonic right sheep, I think you'll find it now.
Yes.
Thousands of blogs. But it's trying to attack Tom Campbell as being fiscal conservative in name only. So
AFCIN.
Right. They make up a completely ridiculous acronym that no one's used before. And they have this metaphor of sheep. A whole bunch of sheep out there. Sheep are flying in the sky like a Lucy in the Sky and Diamonds video. There's a guy,
you really have to be tripping on acid to get
sheep's
this.
Sheep's clothing, yeah. and that demonic sheep keeps popping up. It went viral right away.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So, of course, most folks are calling it ridiculous. Calitix, the Liberal California blog, in a post called Carly Failurina, saying, the attack could be potent in theory, but the execution is laughably bad. It resembles a cross between a bad church recruitment video, a Monty Python sketch, and a Pink Floyd album cover.
Now, wait. Now, here's the thing, though. Some people are saying that this is crazy like a fox.
Right.
So let me give you what Jim Garrity. He says, on the most – Jim Garrity at National Review's the campaign spot – On its most basic level, the ad is a mess, even for a web ad. It's too long, too weird, the arguments are over the map. But he says, On the other hand, the ad is genius, and in the sense that it instantly broke through a very noisy and crowded political environment and got almost everyone who watched it to drop what they were doing and call their personal junkie friends and say, you've got to watch this. In less than 24 hours, it got 80,000 views. He goes on to say, it's a Hail Mary kind of an ad, which means there's a very good chance that it won't work, but a lot of quote-unquote traditional advertised approaches wouldn't have worked either. So he's at least sort of making the argument that that this may be brilliant. I tend to think it's more insane than brilliant, but maybe it'll work. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I'm reminded
that there used to be an old hippie friend of mine who told me that they used to get stoned and watch Nixon's Checker speech. And I can only imagine that this was way better than watching the Checker speech. You don't even need to get high.
I at least want to know if the ad creators were intentionally making it bad like that to get your attention, or they actually thought they had something really witty and hilarious.
I don't know if you heard, I think the guy dressed up like a goat is Robert Davi, who he's either the narrator or the guy who dressed up like the goat. He was in Die Hard and some other movies. Seriously. This is unbelievable.
Let me give you an example that it's a local politic example, so no one else has really heard about this. We had a very tight race for mayor here in Northampton, Massachusetts last year. Classic example of an incumbent that's been in for a long time, running as a pragmatist that had made the hard decisions, whereas you had an outsider trying to exploit all the various decisions that she has made that have stepped on toes, left and right throughout the years. So she wanted to do something to really shake up the race. There's a giant print ad in the main local paper. It says in big letters, it's a great city. Too bad I'm such a crummy mayor. And it turned a lot of heads. A lot of people thought that you're trying too hard. You're trying to be provocative and you're just making yourself look bad.
What gets me, though, about that is you're right. I mean, this is what you do when you're desperate, when you say, we got to throw a Hail Mary, as Garrity said. But is Fiorina really in that bad a shape? I mean, she's got money. You got to assume she's the front runner, at least certainly over DeVore, who, although he's only a few points back, but you have to assume she's the front runner. I would think even over Tom Campbell. I mean, clearly they're afraid of Tom Campbell. But really, I mean, did the race call for this at this point? I mean, it seems a bit extreme.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it could well be, again, that maybe it's a excessively, panic move early in the race. I can say in our local mayor's race here, I happened to talk to the ad guy after the incumbent won and what was considered a come-from-behind victory. He said, this is a professional ad man saying it was absolutely intentional to do something that dramatic, to grab eyeballs and get them, because the subsequent ads weren't as provocative as that.
And there are counterintuitive ads.
But it got everyone's attention, got them to listen to the message. That may be what Fiorina is intentionally trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, but here's the thing. People keep trying to talk me into things that I think are stupid being brilliant. It's the same thing with Sarah Palin's resigning. Oh, Matt, no, that was a brilliant move. You just don't get... So I have a hard time when people...
She has brilliantly made a lot of money.
She has. She has done that. And I guess next week we might be talking about the Tea Party thing. So we'll see there. Another cheap plug for the podcast. I also interviewed Dave Weigel today. That'll be up tomorrow. He's heading, Dave works for the Washington Independent. He covers the conservative beat, and he's heading to the Tea Party in Nashville convention.
Will you be there?
I will not be there. I'm what you call an elitist. I try to not leave the beltway. I try not to go outside there if I can help it. Unless it's to go to Texas to go shooting with Rick Perry, I will do that. If it's in Austin or San Antonio, then I would do that, but I will not be at the Tea Party convention.
What is the concern? Forgive me if I'm transgressing or digressing.
You are so behind here.
Is there a conservative blogosphere attitude about the Tea Party convention? Is everyone excited about it?
No, it's very divided
about it.
It's extremely controversial because Eric Erickson probably the most prominent, most influential conservative blogger in the world, I would guess, came out against the convention, was very skeptical of it. It said that Sarah Palin was probably inadvertently making a mistake by going there. He was concerned because it's a for-profit group that's putting it on. They're charging $500 and some for people to attend. It's very confused. Other groups have been pulling out. So, you know, it's very split. And I think that some conservative bloggers are probably saying, hey, we're capitalists. You know, what's wrong with making a little money? As you know, and others like Eric are voicing concern over it. So I think that it'll depend on how the thing goes. I don't know.
Well, is anyone expecting, you know, a less than desired turnout because there's a controversy around it? Actual Tea Partiers can't afford the $500 to go and whatnot?
Apparently the turnout's going to be good. I can only imagine people will be wearing Brooks Brothers blazers and khaki pants and not the ties with the flags on them. As I often see when I go to conventions, when I do, you know, leave Alexandria, Virginia. But I think it'll depend how it goes. I mean, Bill, here's the problem with this democratization of things. When you flatten things out, when the average person that I've never heard of can be the head of the Tea Party convention, that can be very good. That can be very democratic. It can be, you know, outside-the-box thinking. But it also means that it could be a shyster that just decided to start this thing, a charlatan. So we don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen. And I hope to have Bill back on to do a post-mortem on the thing to find out what he thought. Dave Weigel, who has filled in here with us at Blogging Heads, writes for the Washington Independent, a keen observer of all things conservative for the Washington Independent.
So, what did you two talk about?
We talked about the Tea Party. He's hidden down there today, so we sort of previewed it a little bit. What did we talk about? Oh, I don't even know. But it'll be up tomorrow on the pod. It'll be up when you see this Dia vlog. When you see this Dia vlog, it will be up at mattlewis.org. And you know, we try to do things that aren't terribly topical, you know, so that it lasts for a couple days. Although I think everybody did make Super Bowl picks. So let's ask you, Bill, since we're doing that, this thing will air before the Super Bowl. Who do you want to win? Who do you think is going to win?
I got to tell you, I am so off the sports bandwagon. I barely follow anything anymore. I'm pretty sure I'm not even going to watch. I'll be the half of the country that does not watch the Super Bowl. But just on pure,
you're going New Orleans.
The underdog. You gotta think be great for the Saints to win. Be great for New Orleans to win.
Yeah.
So that's where my heart is.
I'm pulling for and picking the Colts. So since you're not into it, we won't put a dinner on this one. But it should be a good game. And may the best.
I only make dumb bets on politics.
That's right. Well, everybody else is, you know, you and Bill have this great racket going. You know, he bought you dinner, you bought him dinner.
Right.
I need someone buying me dinner. So, by the way, people do watch this thing, despite our critics. I was down in Austin the other week at this Rick Perry Blogger Summit. It was fun. We went to a shooting range and everything.
Rick Perry has his own Blogger Summit.
He had his own Blogger Summit. I was there. Roger L. Simon from Pajamas Media was there. Andrew Breitbart from all of his things was there. Patrick Ruffini, Ben Dominich, a lot of conservatives down there. We were all on panels. Melissa Clouthier, I was on a panel with her talking about blogging and whatnot. But a guy came up to me and he said, I didn't know – this guy lives in Austin and he's a conservative. And he said, I didn't even know about this thing. I saw it on Blogging Heads when I mentioned it the other week. So, you know, winning them over one viewer at a time, Bill.
Well, the other thing about conservatives that I noticed in the blogosphere this week, coming from the left, the Daily Kos commissioned a poll of self-identified Republicans through Research 2000, which found the Republicans still had very virulent extremist views about Obama. 63% say he's a socialist. Only 42% believe he was born in the U.S. You have 55% who are not sure if Acorn stole the election 2008 or not.
They definitely still vote, so I don't think they decided the election.
Then you would be in the no camp, not the yes or not sure camp. And 23% saying that your state should secede from the U.S. 39% saying that Obama should be impeached.
My state should secede or whatever state they happen to be at.
What, your own state. Respondent state.
Okay.
And so is there any kind of conservative reaction? Have conservatives noticed this poll or have they kind of slept it off? It just seems like leading into the Tea Party conference, I imagine some Republicans might worry this is not the face we want to put out in front of the rest of the country.
I feel like we've turned the corner on that. It was getting pretty ugly a few months ago on MSNBC, but I feel like we've turned the corner. I do think it's smart of the Daily Coast to commission these polls. I said that the other week, and maybe a conservative group ought to do the same thing. But because it gives them, gives them news stories, it gives it legitimacy to talk about. But I don't really see it. I don't know where these people that they're talking to. I hang out with a lot of conservatives. Despite my dislike of leaving Alexandria, I was in Fayetteville, Pennsylvania for several days. Last week, met with a lot of conservatives, a lot of Republicans up by Shippensburg University, Chambersburg area. Very, sort of red state folks, and this doesn't really ring true to me. I'm not sure where where this is coming from.
Well, there was a MyDD post, Charles Limo, saying they thought the sample was somewhat skewed and overrepresented Southern conservatives, which Coase himself said, look, this is definitely Southern conservatives that believe this stuff more than other conservatives.
That may very well be. It might be a thing. I was in Pennsylvania. But I was in Austin, too. But, Austin, keep Austin weird is my thing. So maybe Austin wasn't it. I got to get out more. And maybe, Bill, how about this? Blogging Heads could fund our unofficial tour. We could go debate at colleges and universities throughout the South. Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, Ole Miss would be a nice place for us to do this.
And wherever there's barbecue, I'm there.
See, now that we finally found something that we can have bipartisan agreement on.
No one can fight over barbecue.
I went to a really cool barbecue place called Rudy's, which is connected
in Texas?
In Austin. It's connected to a gas station. It's amazing.
Excellent.
Very good food. So
I'm not a Texas barbecue man. I don't like the brisket.
The brisket was good. And here's the cool thing about this place, too. You could go up there, and they would let you sample before you bought. They would let you sample what you got, so it was terrific.
That.
Yeah, I respect that, too. That is transparency.
I'll go to Texas for steak and for chicken fried steak.
Well, next time you're in town, I'm taking you to Red Hot and Blue in Arlington.
That's the conservative joint, right?
Lee Atwater was one of the guys who started that, but they do have a picture, I think, of Al Gore, autographed picture on the wall there. So it's bipartisan.
All right. Well, one last topic before we sign off. As we have spoken, my state has a new senator sworn in, Scott Brown.
Yes.
He's been doing a tour around the state, by the way. He was planning to do a 3-week tour around the state to meet with his new constituents. He had one near where I live at the famed tiki bar, the Huki Lao, where he did a couple of campaign stops previously. Very, very well attended. All the conservatives, all the Tea Partiers have come out, all excited they have one of their own in the Senate now. But this was supposed to be a longer victory lap, and then suddenly Scott Brown wanted to get sworn in earlier. And it seems it's because there was a nomination to the National Labor Relations Board, someone who currently works with the AFL-CIO, and conservatives wanted to make sure that nomination was filibustered, and they wouldn't be able to filibuster it unless they had number 41 sworn in. So Michael Tomasky, who blogs for the British newspaper The Guardian, even though he's U.S.-based, said, why would this happen? Because of appointments. Democrats might use the waning moments of their 60-point supermajority to try to get a generally pro-union appointee, Greg Becker, on the board. This is not dirty pool, folks. This is what parties do in these situations all the time. Besides which, Becker's been held up for months by Republicans. Not generic Republicans. One Republican, John McCain, you know, well, I at least recall he's lost the election rather resoundingly in 2008. Becker would flip the balance of power on the NLRB from 3-2 pro-business to 3-2 pro-union. No suggestion Becker's not qualified. So now Brown reneges on the date he himself suggested, wants to be seated. But far more amazing, the Senate Democrats said yes. What's the matter with these people? Can you picture Mitch McConnell being a nice guy about this if the situation were reversed? And that's, of course, the thing that like frustrates a lot of liberals in the blogosphere immensely. It seems like Democrats are always playing the nice guy, letting the Republicans pull the football away.
Well, I think that they have started playing nice guy lately. I think that there was a lot of really hardball, underhanded stuff going on, trying to ram the health care bill through. And so now I think maybe they've gone a little bit to the other extreme. But let me say this, Bill. You're going to like Scott Brown. I predict I could see you guys hanging.
Really?
I think he's a cool guy.
I'll make a bet.
I think you would like him. I think you, if you met Scott Brown, I bet you would like Scott Brown. I'm going to, once this thing, you know, he's a little busy now, but, you know, I know Eric Fernstrom sort of. I don't think he likes me, but I could get a hold of him. I think I might be able to put you two together, and this could be the beginning of a beautiful thing. You're up there in Massachusetts. It could be good press, too. I mean, let's be honest. Our weekend blog thing could use a little publicity. The Boston Globe might do a piece about bringing people together, Scott Brown and you hanging out. You know, you go to Red Sox games together. I don't know. It could be a beautiful thing.
When I've seen Scott Brown on TV, I say to myself, if I met this guy, I'd say, have a douchebag. That's what I'd say. That's why when I see it on TV, I can't believe this douchebag actually won.
He seems like a good guy to me. One man's douchebags, another man's, I don't know.
So these ads, I mean, the ads with the truck.
That was,
you know, they're sort of, this is told in Washington as if it was sort of like a Fred Thompson truck, this beat up red truck, this real working class hero ambling around the state. It's like this huge, you know, suburban truck. You know, this four-seater truck. This guy's not hauling any cargo in this truck. And that whole kind of, you know, kind of faux working class stuff completely irritates me.
I'm going to get it. Because of him, I'm like getting a barn jacket. I think that's my new look. A barn jacket. It's both elegant and folksy. I think it's perfect. Next time I leave the Beltway, I'm putting the barn jacket on, getting in the truck, and it'll be great.
So now Scott Brown is the 41st senator. You know, I think when we talked last, there was a little bit of rumbling out there from conservatives that Scott Brown wasn't going to be a real conservative and people were going to be disappointed in the end.
Yeah.
You know, well,
it's because there was presidential talk, too. You know,
right,
people already saying he should run for president.
But with him saying that he's pro-choice and whatnot now, again, not that I think he's ever going to take an actual pro-choice vote myself. But other conservatives that are questioning their Scott Brown love at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there was some pushback. I think conservatives are fine with him being there. But let's see once he takes one of the, if he does take some bad votes, you'll see people turn on him, just like they turn on Collins and Snow and whomever. But look, I'm much more outraged by the fact that Barbara Walters is landing interviews with legitimate political people.
Well, she was subbing in on this week on the Sunday.
She should not be subbing in. I mean, she maybe at one point, if she ever was a legitimate reporter, that was a long, long time ago. And now she does The View, and she should not be the. They're scraping the bottom of the barrel for hosts when they when they have to go to her. Let me just lay it out.
Someone's not getting booked on ABC. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, because like I was right on the verge just before this interview. I'm on speed dial, and if George Will, you know, has a cough, I was gonna be the next person they called. No, I mean, look, you know, I just don't think that she should have been the one. I'll just leave it at that.
Before we sign up, I'm just seeing on Politico right now, Coates lobbied for Chavez Connected Oil Company.
Chavez His Chavez's own oil company?
Right, Citgo.
Oh, wow.
Good old Citgo.
Interesting. Well, look, I mean, he's a Washington guy. He's a lobbyist. I don't think he's certainly not a conservative. So that's going to be an issue. We'll see.
I'm sorry, dude. Not Citgo. Harvest Natural Resources, which operates in Venezuela, Russia, and Pakistan.
Right. I think they probably took over when Chavez kicked out the American oil companies or something. I'm not sure. But in any event, you know, Coates could be vulnerable. It's kind of unfortunate. You know, conservatives were really hoping that Mike Pence would run. And Pence announced the other week that he would not seek that Senate seat. So if Pence were in, I don't know if Coates would have run, but if Mike Pence were in, I mean, he would have been I can count on one hand the conservative stars that
yeah,
people
I mean,
love.
If
and
Pence
he's on that
about
list.
Losing a safe seat, I would think he'd be ambitious enough that he'd want to take that race on.
I mean, if he wants to be president someday, which people float his name, he's not going to get there from the House of Representatives.
Right.
He's going to have to be governor. He's going to have to be a senator. And when are you going to have a better opportunity than this? So,
and Dick Lugar is not going anywhere anytime soon, I take it.
Yeah. I mean, so I was a little surprised. I thought Pence was going to pull the trigger on it. But he's very effective in the House. He wants to stay in the House. That's great. He does great work there. But I was a little surprised. I thought he was going to run. And make no mistake, he would have been, you know, he would have been the Club for Growth, would have just given him a blank check probably. So he's a star. I mean, he's there with Coburn and those guys. Coburn in the Senate, obviously. But he's one of the go-to guys for conservatives. He's an all-around conservative, fiscal and social. So it's kind of a loss.
Well, we should wrap this up because I got a baby that needs to go to bed.
All right, my friend. Well, very good chatting with you.
You too as well, sir.
Yes.
Congratulations on the podcast.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
MattLewis.org, is that correct?
You got it, MattLewis.org. Check it out. And
I should mention, you know, there's the Liberal Oasis podcast, liberaloasis.com,
yes.
Every Saturday.
That's right, that's right.
I don't get the big names that Matt Lewis gets, but still, we have a good time.
Well, you know, maybe I can help you out for a price. I'm you know, a capitalist here, Bill. But we'll see what we can do. I'll have your people call my people.
Okay.
All right, man.
Have a good week.
You too.